This episode of Weekly Spooky is brought to you by Boggy Creek, the series, free to watch on Tubi. Follow the exploits of Roger and Sarah, two researchers of the American Yeti Project, as they investigate Bigfoot and try to find proof positive of the legendary monster. But what other mysteries will they uncover in the mysterious backwoods of Boggy Creek? Starring Eric Roberts of The Dark Knight, Brink Stevens of Slumber Party Massacre, Mike Halinski of Haunted House and Sorority Row, and Joni Durian of Babysitter Massacre. Bigfoot just might be the least of their worries as they encounter cursed scarecrows, serial killers, witches, dangerous bank robbers, and ruthless poachers, among many others. So check it out today, free to stream on Tubi. Boggy Creek, the series. Executive produced by Fred Olen Ray, and directed by Henrik Kuto. Hey, that's me.
What's that? You want to be scared? Come with me. You will experience tales of horror, ghosts, and death. It is not recommended for the weak at heart. Listen in the dark. It's more fun that way. This is Weekly Spooky.
Hello, my friends. It's Wednesday. And you know what that means, don't you? It's time for a little spooky in your weekly. I'm your host and narrator, Henrik Kuto, and we have a very, very special episode. You see, the weather's getting hotter outside, and that made me want to take a little trip to the desert. We're heading to the Old West this week for a two-part adventure involving cowboys, cowgirls, Indians, and of course, vampires. But before we get to that, I just want to take a moment to thank you so very much for listening to us. Every single week, we bring you a brand new tale of terror, and I love doing it. And I was thinking today, it's so lonely here in my dark crypt where I record these stories. I want to hear from you. Usually, this is the part of the show where I would ask you to subscribe and leave a comment, but this time, no. I'd like to get some emails from you fine folks. So send me an email at weeklyspooky@gmail.com. Let me know what you're enjoying. Let me know what you'd like to hear more of. Let me know if you've written a scary story and you might want me to consider it for the program. I just want to hear from you guys, because you've kept this going for almost 3 years and over 130 episodes. I'm very thankful, and I can't wait to scare you even more. And if you want it to go even longer, just go to weeklyspooky.com, click on Patreon, and for as little as $1 a month, you can keep the show going directly. I really do appreciate it. Plus, you get bonus scary stories included with your membership. But anyway, my friends, there's a dry heat in the air. I think it's time to head to Deadwood and find out exactly what's going on out there right now.
Calamity Jane versus Dracula, Part 1, by John Oak Dalton.
The Perfido Kid had seen a lot of bad things, and done most of them himself. But he had never seen anything as bad as George Barker's pale, straining ass perched over a fresh grave. "He done took money off of me playing cards in Deadwood. I'll never get it back," Barker exclaimed. It was the grave of Wild Bill Hickok, fresh in the ground, and at first, nobody laughed, because if anyone was inclined to come back as a haint and twice as ornery, it was Wild Bill. But then Sugar Groves, the outlaw band's leader, guffawed, and the others followed suit. Some humor was needed once in a while to calm down this desperate band of men, horse thieves, and former slave catchers and Mexican bandits and gunslinger Al Hoots, who drank whiskey every night and were inclined to shoot at the smallest slight. So Barker crouched and shat on Hickok's grave, his mouth open and braying laughter, until a bullet entered one cheek, making a small hole, and blew out the other cheek in a scatter of blood and flesh that sprayed the tombstone, and Barker went down, screaming. The Perfido Kid and the other men there filled their hands except for the kid's longtime partner, called Johnny Alphabet, who seldom seemed moved by violence, even when he was the cause. Barker gurgled and stopped screaming, slumped over, and Perfido clearly heard Sugar Grove say, "I'll be damned!" When Perfido followed his gaze, he saw a swaying figure holding a smoking pistol in one hand and a bottle of whiskey in the other arising from behind a gravestone. His experienced eye saw a small, scrawny woman in a fringe buckskin jacket, dirty canvas pants, and a battered hat with a band of tarnished silver conches, cavalry boots with a bowie knife jutting from the top, a Wells Fargo coach gun strapped across her back with a length of braided rope, another rope around her neck that looped through the trigger guard of a silver-plated Colt Navy revolver with an ivory grip, and a pair of Smith & Wesson Model 3 Schofield 45 caliber revolvers slung from bony hips. She had a Hopkins & Allen Ranger 32 caliber revolver in one hand, which Perfido assumed she had pulled from her belt as she was out of other options to store it. The Perfido Kid knew all in a rush that this was Calamity Jane, and he was indeed closer to being damned than he had ever been.
"Shoot her!"
yelled Groves, but the men were already firing. Chunks of dirt and stone coughed up all around Calamity Jane as her 32 barked back. Tulsa John Reed, who had been with Sugar Groves the longest, was the first to go down with a bullet in his chest. Little Archie Evans took a bullet in the throat and went down coughing blood. Then Groves's outlaws saw their way towards cover. The big Mexican Joaquin Cortez, called Ocho, took a bullet in the leg diving for cover, hit his head on a tombstone, and was out of the fracas. Perfido ducked behind a low hill and tugged at Alphabet's serape, a big dirty thing that fit the giant like an old army tent. His round blank face blinked at Perfido, then he squatted, but Calamity Jane still stood, swaying, firing until the 32 was empty, then chucking it aside and pulling one of her big 45s. She raised the bottle to her lips with the other hand and took a squinty look at her attackers. Then she started walking towards them. The Perfido Kid was a ladies' man as well as a stone-hearted killer, and he had seen plenty of drunk women, gotten some of them that way, and sobered others up with hard slaps. That Calamity Jane was blind drunk was obvious. That she was killing hard-bitten gun hands threw a chill into Perfido. A loud neigh rose even above the constant gunfire. Perfido looked over his shoulder and saw a second frightening sight. There, a short ways off, stood a tall Appaloosa, night black with white spots and old scars dotting its muscular frame, teeth bared. Grant Carver was the first to break from the gunfight, leaping from behind a withered tree and reaching for the horse. Calamity Jane cut him down, and he skidded in the dirt and died. The Indian called Chillicothe Sam, who always bragged on being a horseman among his people, tried his luck next. He was close to the big horse when the creature reared up and brought his striped hooves straight down on Chillicothe Sam's chest. Bones cracked, and Sam coughed blood. His old pard Ned Cornelius had seen enough and brought his 45 to bear on the horse. The Appaloosa lunged forward, big white teeth bared, and suddenly Cornelius was screaming and showing a bloody hole where his nose had been. His eyes rolled back to whites, and he fell. The Appaloosa kicked with its hind legs and killed a man who'd been in the gang such a short time Perfido couldn't remember his name. Sugar Groves was roaring, seeing his loosely held band of outlaws fall to pieces under the seemingly indifferent gaze of a woman dressed like a raggedy man. So Calamity Jane shot him next, and then her .45 clicked on an empty chamber. With Groves dead, Perfido saw Big Alf Slade tensing to run for it, to escape both Calamity Jane and the murderous Appaloosa with blood on its face. Calamity Jane was sliding her smoking .45 back into its holster when Slade stood up from a crouch and made to turn. Calamity Jane tugged on the braided rope that held her coach gun slung across her back and brought it to bear. She filled Slade with buckshot, and he fell where he stood, gouting blood. And then, all was quiet. Perfido and Alphabet stayed put. From his vantage point, Perfido saw Calamity Jane carefully bend over to set the still half-full bottle of whiskey on the ground. She tried to steady herself, then went down on one knee. She swayed and made an effort to get back up. The Perfido kid had shot men from cover and in the back, and had shot women, so he had no qualms about pressing his advantage. Perfido had a .41 Colt Thunderer revolver that he picked up because of the name, but it had served him in plenty of killings. Perfido propped himself up on one elbow and shot downhill at Calamity Jane. He saw her battered hat fly off on a fountain of blood, and she fell face forward and didn't rise. Next to him, Alphabet's round, placid face finally showed interest. He had been born Joda Skredenberget, and was a big Norwegian with not much English. It was Perfido that gave him his moniker because he got tired of trying to pronounce it, or watching Skredenberget kill people who laughed. Alphabet brought one of his big knives out from under his serape, and his cold, flat eyes glittered. Perfido put a hand on his meaty arm. "We don't got time for that. We gotta go." He had one eye on the big, scarred Appaloosa, who snorted and stomped its feet, and then backed away from the two prone men. There was a scrabbling sound behind him, and he spun and looked down his gun at Ocho, crawling across the ground and dragging one blood-drenched leg.
"Damn that Calamity Jane! Help me to a horse, amigo!"
"Why? You can't ride. You'd just slow us down." And with that, the Perfido kid shot Ocho in the face. Ned Cornelius had one hand on a tree and one over his ruined nose. The Perfido kid turned and studied him.
"I can ride! I can ride!"
"Yeah, but you're ugly to look on." And Perfido shot him too. Then, with a last look at Calamity Jane's still form, he turned and quit the cemetery. The Perfido kid and Alphabet were not much outside the gates when a long, bloody shadow was thrown across their shoulders. Alphabet had time to think about his knife, and the kid, and all the women he had known. But neither heard Calamity Jane's guns barking twice more. When Colorado Charlie Utter didn't see Calamity Jane by noon, he went where he always went to find her. Wild Bill Hickok's grave at the Mount Moriah Cemetery. He saw a number of dead men there that would greatly increase the population of the Boot Hill Deadwood had diligently filled. Worse, Utter found old Arbus Pike, the coffin maker who lived in a little shack at the edge of the cemetery, dead as well. Utter knew Pike often shared his bottle with Jane and was the only one who could keep time with her, a fact that had led Pike to his lonesome shed, his family gone back east somewhere. Utter and his plodding town horse Clover ambled back to Deadwood more slowly, trying to cut her trail. There was a crust of snow, but Utter could watch sign and let Clover go. Sometimes, when Calamity Jane was really bad, she would steal Clover from Utter's camp because she knew that no matter where she passed out, Clover would eventually walk back to town. Utter wished Jane had taken him this time. Clover shied a bit, and Utter saw why. Uphill, not far from the trail, stood the great black Appaloosa crisscrossed with scars that Jane had taken to riding. The horse had blood in its mouth and on its hooves. It saw Utter and, to Utter's relief, ran the other direction. Utter knew that the horse hated men, but his relief was tinged with a little fear. Jane was the only one that horse would allow near, and the horse had not come out this far from Deadwood under its own steam.
Utter remembered the day that Appaloosa had come into town with an outlaw called Hungry Bill Grenaway on its back. Grenaway had brought that Appaloosa right down the main street of Deadwood, bucking and snorting, yanking at the Spanish bit in its mouth. Hungry Bill tried to control the horse with a length of knotted rope. He jumped down in front of the Gem Saloon and tied it to the rail there. The horse had blood running out of its mouth and all along its flanks when Grenaway went in for a drink. As the bartender Johnny Burns explained to Utter later, Grenaway stood at the bar and told everyone there he had killed a Nez Perce warrior for that Appaloosa. Whether he killed the Indian in a fair fight or not was up to speculation, but the fact that these horses were the pride of the Nez Perce was not in question, and Grenaway enjoyed talking about how he was beating the horse into submission, the way he had done to the Indians. That was until Calamity Jane came through the batwing doors with her bowie knife in her hand and set upon a surprised Hungry Bill. In short order, Grenaway was bleeding from several deep cuts, and his clothes hung in ribbons. Calamity Jane picked that knotted rope off from the floorboards and began beating Grenaway across the back with it. Grenaway was soon crawling down the main street and away with Jane on his heels. Hungry Bill was not seen in town again, but wherever he was surely crippled up. There were several men standing around the horse, who was kicking and neighing. Burns offered to shoot the horse as a mercy until Jane chased him back into the gem with the shotgun off her back. Then she patted the horse as easy as you please, removing the Spanish bit and leading it out of town. Soon, Calamity Jane was riding that fierce Appaloosa from place to place, and there was one more reason to be scared to see her coming. Utter checked a few more places in town and finally ended up at the office of the new sheriff, Con Stapleton. Utter had to knock, as Stapleton kept the door to the building locked at all times, with himself inside it. After a moment, Utter saw Stapleton's white, baleful eye, and then the black hole of the new sheriff's Colt Army revolver alongside. "You alone, Colorado?" "No, I got the James and Younger boys with me." The lock on the door snicked open, and Utter stepped inside. "Who are you hiding from, Stapleton?" Con Stapleton retreated to a plain desk against the wall. Above it hung a Spencer rifle on two pegs. The room was hot and stuffy from a smoky little stove. Stapleton looked hunkered down for war. "I don't hide from nobody. Not even Calamity Jane?" Stapleton gave Utter a long look. "No, sir. Even though she got up a rumpus at Bella Union last night?" "What do you know about that?" "Nothing, which is why I come to ask you." Utter had no intention of telling Stapleton about the pile of corpses at the cemetery. He was sure Calamity Jane would never kill old Arbus Pike, but wouldn't roll the dice on any of the others. Stapleton rubbed his jaw. "So some of the boys was playing cards, and Fast Hand Fred Webb drew aces and eights. He laughed, and Jane, who was drinking at the bar, overheard it. I reckon Fast Hand is stretched out on a board somewheres," mused Utter. "No, Jane just drew and shot him in the hand. Three fingers got blowed off, and then that dog what Tom Miller keeps behind the bar jumped out and ate the fingers. Damn, remind me to stay away from that mutt, now that it's got a taste for human flesh. Fast Hand had two pards with him at the table. One wasn't drunk enough to draw on Calamity Jane, but the other, what was called Bitterroot Bob, was, and Jane shot him twice, but he'll live." Jane was in a forgiven mood. She has been in a mood. Calls herself a widder these days. "Careful how you talk about that," warned Utter. "You think she and Wild Bill was married like she says? He didn't never give up the sportin' life that I seen." "As I said," Stapleton narrowed his eyes. "She was blind drunk anyways. It don't never hurt her shootin' eye." Stapleton put his thumb in his belt. "Webb and them other two boys decided against pressing charges and lit out for Leadville. Otherwise, Calamity Jane would be in that cell over there this morning. No, you'd be laying on a board somewheres, and we'd be looking for a new sheriff." Stapleton looked pained. "I don't know why you got to nettle me, Colorado. 'Cause you again, Calamity Jane, and that ain't a safe place to be. Fast Hand Fred Webb ought to drop a coin in the collection plate that all he got to do today is change his nickname to Stumpy. Utter stepped out onto the street, looking up and down. He had talked to the doc and peeked in at the Undertaker. He knew she would never go to Nuddle and Mann's Saloon since Crooked Nose Jack McCall changed all their lives, and was no longer welcome at the Bella Union or the Gem, at least for a day or two. Calamity Jane cast a long shadow wherever she stood. How could she have disappeared from the streets of Deadwood? The day started like a lot of days started for Martha Jane Canary. She awoke with her head ringing, the sunlight too bright, not sure where she was. Then she realized she was where she often awoke, on the road to the cemetery on Mount Moriah. The woman known as Calamity Jane sat up, sending an empty bottle spinning away into the grass. She stood, squatted back down, dropped her canvas pants, and peed into the ditch alongside the road. That is when Calamity Jane thought she saw a bloody-faced angel. The figure was all in white, jacket and vest and slacks and crumpled hat and splintered parasol, slumped against a tree, blood streaming down his face. Jane hitched up her pants, put her hand on the handle of her Hopkins and Allen Ranger stuck in her belt, and stepped forward. The man came awake all at once, reaching for his own empty holster, then scrabbled around the grass until he came up with what Jane thought was a stick, but turned out to be a silver-tipped walking cane. "Whoa there, pard," Jane said. But she could see the man was in no shape for walking, much less fighting with his cane. He dropped the walking cane and waved feebly with his free hand. "I see I'm at your disposal, miss. I have been subjected to banditry, which I would not have fallen prey to were I not medically indisposed at the moment." Calamity Jane looked at him narrowly as a round of coughing took away the man in white's breath. "That blood on your face, you're a lunger?" The man dabbed at his mouth with a white handkerchief. "And the curative powers of the Dakotas have yet to work its magic." The man tucked his kerchief away, spotted with blood. He offered up a salute instead of his hand. "I'm Tom Mackey, miss, but my associates call me Whiskey Tom. I would be obliged if you would not call me miss." Whiskey Tom took in the fringe buckskin jacket, canvas pants, battered hat, cavalry boots with the bowie knife jutting from the top, the Wells Fargo coach gun strapped across her back with a length of braided rope, her Hopkins and Allen Ranger 32 caliber revolver now in her back belt. "I beg your pardon, by what name shall I call you?" "Calamity Jane." Something flickered in Tom Mackey's eyes. "And I am recently widowed, so that calling me a miss wouldn't be right." "Ah, I did not hear about this marriage or its unhappy end. Who was your husband?"
"Wild Bill Hickok."
Whiskey Tom swallowed audibly.
"I see."
Whiskey Tom tore his gaze from Jane and looked around himself. "I was headed for the Gem to deal faro, but I see my dealing box is gone along with my money and what meager possessions I carried."
"You still got that purdy parasol?"
"You are right, and shade from the sun is no small thing in these sun-baked lands." Calamity Jane rested her thumbs in her gun belt. "I would be happy to help you back to Deadwood as I amble that way myself, but I would be just as happy to go hunting for your belongings. For a fee." Whiskey Tom got to his feet. "As much as I would like to oblige you on all counts, I cannot do it in good conscience. The scoundrel that robbed me had an unwholesome gleam in his eye. However, I do believe I winged him before my pistol was taken in a fit of fearful coughing. And I miss that gun. It was ivory-handled and silver-plated." Calamity Jane gave Tom a tight-lipped smile.
"Unwholesome scoundrel? Them's my favorite kind."
Whiskey Tom searched her face. "He was also dragging a coffin."
"Mighty convenient. It may have had a current occupant."
"An owl hoot dragging a heavy coffin? How bad a tracker you think I am?" Kinch Yontis had murder in his blood when he crossed the smooth-talking, white-suited man. First, Yontis had been kicked off the stagecoach to Deadwood for speaking out of turn to a woman he thought might be in the sporting life. The man she was with, who Yontis came to learn was her husband, took umbrage and drew a pistol on him when they stopped to stretch their legs. The stage driver and the Jasper-riding shotgun had weapons on him as well before he could think. It was 3-1, so Yontis did nothing when they unlashed the master's coffin and lowered it to the dirt. But one day, unlimited power would be his, Yontis thought. It was what the master promised. Yontis began pulling the coffin towards Deadwood as the heat rose. It didn't take long for Yontis to smash the consumptive gambler's faro box and leave it behind. He had only taken it out of spite anyway because of the bullet in his shoulder that would need to be pried out in Deadwood. But he kept the few coins he had stolen to pay the doctor, if the master did not exact his own fee. Yontis was a middling ranch hand on the Morris spread when Quincy Morris struck out for parts unknown. During the ranch boss's long absence, most of the other hands had drifted on, but Kinch Yontis had nowhere in particular to go, and nobody in particular who wanted him. So he stayed on the crooked queue and did as little as possible, although as little as possible grew to be more and more as their numbers dwindled. And then, one night, a new boss arrived. Yontis was thinking about that night when he pulled his heavy burden up to the livery stable and stopped. The old man who ran the livery had been either just awakened or had been drinking. As night was falling on Deadwood, it could have been either.
"You can put that coffin around back," the old man said sourly.
"It needs to be inside, tucked in with the hay," Yontis said. The old man snorted.
"I don't reckon the occupant cares none."
"But he does," Yontis said, and realized it was dark enough to open the lid. Calamity Jane could see that Whiskey Tom's attacker had dragged the coffin all the way to the livery stable. To what end, she did not know yet. But she did know that Whiskey Tom's final destination was the gem and faro dealing, and could probably stand her a drink or two for acting as his guide. It was Al Swearingen himself, owner of the gem, who set up their drinks after warning Calamity Jane about fighting. Her old friend Colorado Charlie Utter also joined the pair at the bar and looked at Whiskey Tom carefully.
"Well, Jane, you done brought back one alive."
And that's all Utter said about his morning-long search for her.
"I ain't seen your horse, though."
Jane squinted at him.
"Was I riding him?
Or he done followed you?" Calamity Jane nodded, and Utter realized she had no memory of what had happened.
"He'll come home when he feels like it."
Utter nodded, but said nothing about the fate of anyone that might come across the Appaloosa until it found its only master again. Calamity Jane put her drink down suddenly. She had been an Army scout and a Pony Express rider, and knew to trust the prickling of her scalp. She looked around the crowded, dimly lit bar and took note of a very pale, very thin figure in a dark suit with a short cape inching along the wall. He slipped up the stairs, and Calamity Jane wondered in passing if he had the strength to take on the pleasures available up there. She turned back to her drink, but soon, screams from the second floor put her pistol in her hand, and she saw instantly that Colorado Charlie had done the same. Whiskey Tom sat, sipping at his namesake drink, and watching them with mild interest as the two thundered up the stairs. There was no thought of seeking out Deadwood's new sheriff, Con Stapleton, who had undoubtedly locked himself in the jail at the first sounds of gunfire. Calamity Jane topped the landing first and saw the pale, thin figure in the dark clothes standing there. But she looked past him for signs of a rumpus, and so was surprised when he began moving quickly towards them, almost more quickly than Jane's eye could register. Both Calamity Jane and Utter fired at once, and neither ever went wide. The ghostly figure was hit and thrown sideways, crashing through the banister and hitting the bare plank floor below. Both gun hands peered over the broken banister. "That sounded like Pearl," ventured Utter. "And it would be a sorrowful thing if she were hurt. She's the freshest flower in this dirt patch." The silence was finally broken below by the light tinkling of the piano. All eyes turned to see Whiskey Tom curiously, idly plinking away at the keys, a soft melody. So it was unlikely background music for when the figure leaped up, more like rose up, from the floor and threw himself at Swearengen, smashing him into the big mirror behind the bar, and then raced, almost flew, across the room and out the bat-winged front doors of the gem. Then the saloon really erupted into chaos, so it was some time before Utter realized Pearl was indeed dead, and several other sporting girls besides, blood pouring out of them. Calamity Jane was looking for someone to kill and marched out of the batwing doors. Utter saw this and followed, so they were the only two treated to the curious sight of the being in the black suit scrambling up the side of the gem and, with the flap of its short black cloak, apparently taking to wing and disappearing into the moonlight. Utter felt an enormous chill trip down his spine, but Calamity Jane seemed unfazed. Utter wasn't sure what ghosts she saw every day already. "What were that thing?" Utter finally said. Calamity Jane had smoking pistols in both hands. "Something that needs kilt," she said, and looked off into the darkness. What was forming there was a group of figures, slowly making their way towards Calamity Jane and Colorado Charlie. "Pearl," croaked Utter. Calamity Jane held firm with her two pistols. "That ain't Pearl," she countered. But Utter strode forward, his eyes fixed on the bloody figure emerging from the gloom with others of the working girls from the gem. Utter reached out a hand to the soiled dove, and she reached out in return. "Utter!" Calamity Jane shouted. But it was too late. Pearl's hand grabbed Utter by the throat, with a grip stronger than any normal woman or man. Her voice hissed out, filled with grave dirt. "Get away from us. The master wants a special bride tonight." Pearl threw Utter into the side of the livery stable, and he hit with a sickening sound to Calamity Jane's ears. It sounded like death. Calamity Jane fired, but Pearl was flinging herself through the air, almost flying, sharp teeth gleaming. Over her shoulder, in the last second, Calamity Jane thought she saw Wild Bill Hickok, and thought that maybe he'd not been in her mind, but a real haint, after all. End of part one. Well, my friends, I hope you enjoyed the first part of Calamity Jane versus Dracula. Make sure to tune in next week, same time, on Wednesday to hear the thrilling conclusion of our first ever two-parter. I know I'm enjoying it. I love a good Western, but especially a Western where you have some vampires. I mean, just for good measure. So, anyway, my friends, I want to say a humongous thank you for everybody who subscribed, tuned in every Wednesday, and of course went the extra mile on Patreon, which is the best way to support the program. For as little as $1 a month, you can support the show, get exclusive content, and my undying gratitude. Just go to weeklyspooky.com, click on Patreon, choose the tier that works for you, and help us out, because we're going to keep bringing the spooky on the weekly for a long time to come. I just feel it in my ratty old bones. And speaking of people who have supported us so very much, I want to say a humongous thank you to our Patreon podcast boosters, folks who pay just a little bit extra to hear their names thanked on the show. And they are Christopher Sullivan, Kathy Proke, Gino Lyons, Karen Wiemet, Jack Kerr, Jeff and George Hilton, Craig Cohen, and Kevin Fry. Thank you all so much. And the first exclusive Patreon creepypasta episode will be dropping in the next week or so. You don't want to miss it. I'll be reading some of the most classic, terrifying internet urban legends to terrify and titillate you. And I sure am looking forward to it. But for now, I need to go enjoy some air conditioning and get back to whatever it is I do around here all day long. And do make sure to drop us an email at weeklyspooky@gmail.com. I just want to hear from you all. Hear what you're enjoying and hear what you're up to. Because you're kind of my friends. So for myself, for my executive producer Rob Fields, my producer Dan Wilder, and our composer Ray Mattis, I will talk at you later.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to find your way back next week. But for now, you are safe. Trust me.